Yes, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Pepsi Tutu. I'm from Botswana. I'm chairing the panel, which is entitled The Day of the African Child, 30 Years On, Where Are We Now? And I have a wonderful panel of ladies here, whom I'll introduce to you briefly. We have Maria Mbeneka from Kenya. She's a named partner of the firm Kimani Kabucho Mbeneka and Company Advocates, and has been in private practice for the past 18 years. She's a council member of the Commonwealth Lawyers Association representing East Africa and Seychelles, and her topic is 30 Years On, a Spotlight on Child Marriage. Our next presenter will be Adelaide Bene Prempeh from Ghana. She's a dual qualified barrister and solicitor of Ghana and England and Wales. She was initially called to the bar in 2001, and her legal career extends over a decade in predominantly child and family law. She set up a practice B&P Associates in Accra, Ghana. Her topic is advancing the welfare of children in Ghana. Following Adelaide will be Judge Fatoumata Ndembele Diarra. She's from the Republic of Mali. She was appointed to the ICC in 2003 and is the former president of the ICC. She's the founding president of the Office on Relief for Impoverished Women and Children and currently chair of Observation of the Rights of Children and Women. Fatoumata gave me that title in French, Chair of Observatoire des Droits de la Femme et de l'Enfant au Mali. I hope I did justice to the French there. Her topic is, does Malawian family law protect women and children? Our next speaker after Judge Fatoumata will be Eurydice Baptista. Eurydice is an attorney based in Angola, and she specializes in family law, labor, and corporate law. She holds a Master's of Business Administration degree from Anglia Ruskin University in the United Kingdom. Her topic will be the protection of children's economic rights after divorce. She will be followed by Mbaye Fatou Bintou, who is from Senegal. And Mbaye works as a legal advisor, mainly on labor and insurance law, but she has a big interest in family law and children and works closely with an association of women who practice law. Her topic is entitled Legislation in Senegal Concerning Children. Finally, of this esteemed panel, we have Yvette Mafunza Espada. She's a Mozambican lawyer, lecturer, and human rights activist who has worked in this field for more than 15 years. She's an official of the Human Rights OHCHR in Maputo and has held that position for 2 years. She has served as the president of the Human Rights Commission of the Mozambican Bar Association and has been a lawyer at the Mozambican League of Human Rights. Her topic, the family law and protection against early marriages in Mozambique. Thank you very much. I'll start off now with Maria. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Everybody can hear me clearly. Greetings from the Commonwealth Lawyers Association. I'd like to the presence of our President Brian Spears, the CLA, as well as the former President Santan, and all CLA members and everyone who's tuning in from East Africa and across the world. Basically to report. And this report written in 2018. And as we, you know, discuss the Day of the African Child, like Linda had so aptly introduced in the beginning, we're looking at children, because remember these children in South Africa were demonstrating in order to have their rights recognized. Especially the right to education. So the CLA report, nevertheless, is regulating child marriage in the Commonwealth. And this report is a 93-page, very in-depth, and it considers the prevalence of child marriage within the 52 member states of the Commonwealth and how the Commonwealth is implicated, you know, the of child marriage. So it's this report has a specific focus on the role and status of domestic and international law in eliminating child marriage. It is parts. So the first part, which talks in international and regional mechanisms, you know, to deal with that. And it goes in depth into looking at the different continents where we have our member states. And part talks about child marriage and the domestic law in each of these countries. So it's quite quite in depth. And I shared it with Ali and Pepsi. So I'm sure every participant here will be able to get it once they make avail to them. And finally, it goes on to give recommendations about what we think should be done, you know, as the Commonwealth. Of course, gives various dates of ratifications of international conventions that deal with marriage. When we look at, I don't know if Ali is able to project the slide, slide page 3, I think the third slide. I have tried to talk about, you know, data from Kenya, because, you know, everybody is talking about country. And briefly, in Kenya, when it comes to child marriage, 23% of the girls are actually married before the age of 18. And 4% of children are before the age of 15. And in the report, we're able to find that education is a key driver when it comes to the prevalence of marriage. And 67% of the women who are aged between 20 to 24 have no with no education, were basically married as children. So living in rural areas, it is found that are more likely to be married before the age of 18 than those. And this urban has actually increased by 36% since 2003. So the law in Kenya, which we have that was passed in 2014 after a raft of amendments, was a big push in Kenya by the practitioners in Kenya, and you know, a big to the organization known as FIDA in Kenya, that was instrumental in the Marriage Act, and you know, persons who can enter marriage are those who are obviously in. And then the act, under the act, marriage to a minor is, and consent can only be given by a person who's aged 18 and above. So when we look at the constitution, the right to marry is enshrined in our constitution. You know, that is a guarantee. And there's emphasis on a person of the opposite sex. And then in this context, marriage and children, the rights of children are recognized in the constitution, and their rights which are assigned to children. Such rights include harmful practices. So back to wider scope within the Commonwealth, and in accordance, you know, this report, more than 720 million women today were married as children. An astounding number, if you ask me. And 375 million were married before their 18th birthdays. The Commonwealth population have been married before the age of 18. So, you know, it's quite astounding the number of girls are married on a daily basis, which is 24,000. And that's quite a big number. And if you break it down, even 17 girls every minute. And this is across the Commonwealth. So the 52 states, what the situation looks like. So you know, we have found in the report that child marriage leads to lower levels of education, economic status of women is obviously affected, premature sexual activity, and this rape, and then high maternity, you know, high maternity and infant mortality. So, you know, that some of the things that, you know, child marriage are basically criminal in that context, because rape is a criminal offense, yet of the marriage, many early marriage, it is not be so. So, of Commonwealth countries have no constitutional provision require, you know, the marriageable age to be 18 and over, and only 6% and it as to the age of minimum age of marriage being 18. So, in some countries, in the report, we found that in some Commonwealth countries, girls will be married as young as 14 or 15 years old. So, while offenses against children are criminalized to some degree in all Commonwealth countries, age is only explicitly criminalized in a few countries. And there obviously needs to be more done. And that's why, as the CLA in this report, we came up with recommendations, a number of them. Ask Ali to move yes to, I think that's the fourth of seventh slide, please, Ali. Thank you. And just dwell on these recommendations, because us today who are participating as members of the legal profession, we have to look at the recommendations and find ways to actually implement them. And the first one being that the law should be consistent and uniform between girls and boys, and a mandate age of 18 years. And why this recommendation is because that and concrete concept, so that we can ensure that there's progress across the board, so girls are equal or approach this issue equally, and ensure that in each country, you know, that the law aligns with the international legal obligations, because remember, most Commonwealth countries have tried to align themselves with legal obligations, international, and therefore we want to ensure that this is actually carried across the board. It is recommended that those who enable child marriage should be criminally sanctioned. Such criminal laws should be enforced. I want to dwell a little on some of the interrelated or interconnected issues, such as child marriage, teen pregnancy, and female genital mutilation or female genital cut. And they are interrelated. Even if you go further into menstruation, what happens to a girl when she starts menstruation really is a trigger to the rest of the issues, such as FGM and child marriage or teenage pregnancy. So these issues are very rooted in the society, and they actually entrench quality. And because of cultural norms and even poverty or inadequate access to education or even understanding sexual and reproductive health, marriage is then, you know, would I say the last or the final problem. And this is information that was gathered by baseline report that was it's supported by the Dutch government. It's called the Yes, I Do baseline report. It's very, if you check online, you can find the report and see some information there. And this particular to Kenya. And in the area where I come from, this is actually battling, especially because between, you know, in 2020, because of COVID, children were not going, and the children who are in rescue centers were sent back home. I find that in those instances, there has been a resurgence of the cut, there has been a child marriage, and this has actually clawed back on all the gains that we've made as a region, you know, various counties surrounding us. And we find now that there's an increase to ensure that the children are back in school and in a tough situation because many of them are actually leaving their quote unquote homes to go to school. So it's a real quagmire, but it will require a lot of stakeholder interagency cooperation to get us back on track. That there were several recommendations, but I'm just highlighting the three or four which I think are quite crucial. And the third recommendation in this report is that the law should require mandatory and free registrations of births and marriage. Registration might seem like a very mundane and routine thing to do, but it actually works as a very, very effective marriages because or child marriages, because you know, if you're not yet the age of consent, then you know you wouldn't be able to, or you wouldn't be allowed by the government. So these marriages are conducted secretly, below the radar. Then the governments perhaps have to work harder. And here you'll allow me to just focus on a case that we cite in the report, which is those who are from South Africa very well. And this case basically, it refers to custom, which is associated with abducting, raping of young women. And it's referred to, I hope I say this correctly, as ukutwala. And, it involves the abduction of girls by older men with the aim of compelling them into marriage. So, you know, this is done actually with the consent of the girl, and I'm sure it's not peculiar to South Africa. And, you know, it was defended or continues to be defended by those who practice it, like in many other cultures within Africa. So, 2014, this gentleman became the first defendant to be convicted in practice, which was carried out on a 14-year-old victim, and he was sentenced to 22 years in prison. Obviously, of the court, he appealed that decision, and his main argument was that consent, you know, was to be determined in accordance with tradition. So he was being the practice, saying that because there has been consent by, you know, that is enshrined with this, then, you know, the bride can be coerced into marriage and she will pretend to. But anyway, the court did not agree with him, and conventions alongside provisions of the constitution, which aim the kids from harmful practices, and upheld the decision and the sentence. This report, as I finalize, because I'm aware we have many, many speakers, is available to everyone who's participating today. And I know Ali and Pepsi will be able to share it. So I'll be on standby questions for any questions on the report. And I want to say thank you again for this.
Thank you, Maria.
We now move on to Adelaide with the topic, advancing the welfare of children in Ghana. Please unmute Adelaide.
Thank you, Pepsi. I'm very delighted to be part of this very dynamic program where I see a lot of African sisters, indeed a brother earlier, across the continent. Before I start, can I ask Ali if I can share my screen? Thank you.
You may proceed. We can see the screen.
Great. So my topic, as has already been introduced, is advancing the welfare of children in Ghana. And this is very much within the context of how far we have come as individual countries in Africa and Ghana in particular. There are a number of successes that we have chalked that I want to have the opportunity to speak about, and also to speak about where we are and where we hope to get to. So in this presentation, I'm going to talk about firstly, the historical context of Ghana, our background, our child and family protection system. I will touch on our legal framework as we have it now. One of the key reforms that have taken place, adoption, having acceded to the Hague Convention on Inter-Country Adoption, and end up speaking very briefly on education, which is in honor of the Soweto children who fought the good fight for us in relation to seeking quality of education and also the right to be heard. So speaking very briefly about our historical setting in Ghana, I would say that we have a beautiful system where children who are not able to be cared for by their parents, their natural parents, their biological parents, are absorbed in the extended family environment. And I dare say that will not be dissimilar in other African countries. So the benefits of that sort of setting is clear. Children are allowed to be brought up in their familiar environment and still connected very much to their natural families. But the challenges to that is that with such a close informal community, it is very difficult to actually police anything that happens within the confines of the family. The informal family arrangement lends itself to sometimes abuse of children. There are practices that have gone on and still go on, which nothing much can be done about because there's no culture of reporting, there's no transparency, there's no accountability. So looking at that, against that background, I want to say firstly that Ghana has come a very long way. Why do I say that? So back in 2013, just before 2013, it came to the attention of the authorities that by and large, there were a lot of weaknesses in what I'd call the alternate care system. There were a lot of informal arrangements between families and foster carers who were not formalized or regulated, but generally taking on children at a fee and sometimes ending up exchanging these children for fees, which essentially ended up in child trafficking, ended up in adoption processes, which had no follow-up processes or monitoring processes to ensure that the children are well-placed or they are well looked after. So in 2013, the Ministry of Gender, as it then was, embarked upon an embargo on the entire adoption system. And at that stage, the opportunity was taken to undertake an assessment, and an international social services committee was set up to do an assessment of the system and to make recommendations. And as you can see, the number of recommendations that were made were basically to address the weaknesses in the system. So the recommendations were for a robust child protection framework, more regulation, more supervision, licensing and accreditation of adoption agencies, as well as foster homes, and very crucially, funding to be provided for residential facilities, because it was discovered that many a time these residential facilities were left unfunded by government, and therefore they were at the mercy of individuals and other organizations who promised them funding in exchange for children, essentially. So timetabling forward, this culminated into a child and family welfare policy of 2015. And essentially, this is our comprehensive legal framework for child protection as we have it. And although a lot of recommendations and policies were put in place, it very critically recognized the dichotomy between our laws as we know them and the community, because it became abundantly clear that the laws had to coexist with our customary practices. And therefore a period ensued where there was a lot of pilot schemes put in place for education and sensitization of our laws in our rural communities and so on, all geared towards the best interest of the children. All this work was done as a preparation, I'd say foundation, to Ghana's accession to the Hague Convention on the Protection and Cooperation in Respect of Intercountry Adoption in 1993. So in September 2016, Ghana acceded to the Hague Convention on Intercountry Adoption, and this was incorporated into our law in January of 2017 by the Children Amendment Act. So the legal framework as we have it now is what is up on your screen. And by the way, the slides will be available in the resources section of IAFL afterwards. So if I'm skimming through, you have another opportunity if you're interested to read more. So the first that I've got there is a United Nations Convention on the Rights of a Child 1989, which Ghana wears very proudly. And this is because Ghana was the first country in the world to accede to this convention back in 1990. We acceded to the convention on the 5th of February 1990. And as it happens, today is the exact 31st anniversary of our accession to this convention. The second is the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child 1990, which will not be news to most of African countries. We are well aware of this. And this charter, also known as the Children's Charter, was put in place to specifically deal with issues and challenges of the African child. So it's not dissimilar from the Convention of 1989, but it's rather focused on Africa and the African child. Our supreme law, which is the 1992 Constitution of Ghana, champions fundamental human rights for children. And the Hague Convention, which I'll speak to in a moment. So you see that we have the Children's Act of 1998. I've listed that because that was essentially the starting point of us formalizing the adoption process, putting structures in place to say adoption is a formal process. It basically ends the relationship between the child and the natural parent and gives parental rights to the adoptive parents. So I have the definition of adoption here, which is essentially a universal adoption relationship, but very important, and especially in our cultural setting. It was important for the natural family to realize that such an order terminates the pre-existing legal rights with a natural family. So the Children's Act is what I spoke about in relation to formalizing the adoption process. So let's look at the reforms as we know them now. Now, the Hague Convention introduced Ghana to a group of contracting member states and a system of cooperation and disclosure, whereby we had to put in place certain structures, and the most important structure of them all was the Central Adoption Authority. Pursuant to the Hague Convention, each member state needs to put together some structures. And the first is actually opening up the Central Adoption Agency, who will be fully in charge of the adoption process and overseeing the adoption process. So we now enjoy the uniformity of the approach and the Hague Convention, where children are prioritized as follows. So every step or every effort is made to place a child within the family by way of adoption. Failing that, efforts are made to place children in the country of origin. And intercountry adoption, although is available under Hague, is very much a fallback position and not the starting point. This law actually incorporated the Hague Convention into our laws, the Children Amendment Act. Of 2016. It was incorporated on the 1st of January 2017. We now have a transparent system, a rigorous system of assessment. We also have, most importantly, an active promotion of the well-being and best interest of the child. So institutions, as I spoke about, are firstly the Central Adoption Authority, which has the sole mandate of adoption. There's an adoption secretariat, there's a board, and very crucially, there's a technical committee made up of a number of professionals that advise the entire adoption process from the beginning to actually the final orders being made. And these very crucially involve doctors, psychologists, and the like to advise the process throughout. So very importantly, as part of our Hague Convention membership, all adoption agencies have to be accredited. They have to be go through a process of assessment in order to be accredited, including foreign adoption agencies. It also is very important to note that adoption agencies are to be non-for-profit, and they are also to ensure that whatever process they become the go-between, the central adoption authority, as well as prospective adoptive parents. At the moment, Ghana is yet to accredit any agency, and I think that the delays have been caused in relation to COVID, and as we know, the circumstances we find ourselves. But we now have the Department of Social Welfare under the Ministry of Children and Women Affairs as the sole agency dealing with adoptions. This is hopefully yet to change, and it's been confirmed that a number of agencies have made an application, and in the first quarter of this year, the plan is to try and process these applications so that prospective adoptive parents have a variety in terms of the agency that they approach.
Sorry, Adelaide, your time is up. Can I ask you to wind up, please?
Yes. So just to wind up very briefly, I wanted to touch upon in 30 seconds or so, since we are in the segment of the Day of the African Child, and that is Ghana, as of 2017, established a free senior secondary school policy in line with the sustainable development goals. And we are now experiencing a surge in children being educated from basic to secondary school, basically free without any charge. And we're hoping that notwithstanding COVID, we can progress in digitalized education to ensure that no child is left behind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adelaide. Our next presenter is Judge Fatoumata, her topic being, does Malian family law protect women and children? Please unmute, Judge Fatoumata, you're muted. We cannot hear you, you are muted.
Non. Et réactiver le micro.
We seem to be having some technical difficulties there. Are you able to assist, Ali?
I will try. It may be best to go on to the next speaker and come back.
I'll do that. Thank you. Our next speaker is Eurydice Baptista. I hope you're ready to take over straight away, Eurydice. You're also muted.
I can't hear you, Madam Chair.
Judge Fatoumata, can you hear us now?
I can hear you.
You may go ahead, we can hear you.
Wow. Oh. Cuckoo. Now.
We can hear you, go ahead.
Quand je suis muted, on me donne la parole, je n'arrive pas à prendre la parole. On va en conférence là.
Yeah, me too. Eurydice, I think you can.
Okay. Do you hear me now?
Yes, we hear you. You may go ahead.
Okay, please. Okay. The family quad of Mali is a mixture of French civil code and rules of Islamic and some codified African custom. Does it adequately protect children? Does it guarantee equality between the two spouses? I will try to find answer. I note Nigeria and Tanzania could have the same problem with Mali. We have children marriage, we have polygamous, we have inequality between two spouses. The assets inherited from the French civil law are the consent requirement of marriage, the secular character of marriage, the celebration and the registration of the marriage in the civil registry, so you can have the proof of your marriage. And repudiation is prohibited, and custody of the child is given to the survival parents after the death of one of them. But the negative aspects which come from Islamic culture are the age of marriage. Girls are given in marriage at 16 and boys at 18, sometimes with parental authorization. This age can get down, so this disposition violates the Maputo Protocol, who set age marriage of child at 18 for boys and girls. And the remain of customary law, without being included in the code, certain customs are tolerated and coexist with the written family code. Example, the levy rate, which consists in assignment the widow of the deceased person as wife of one of these brother or cousin. Most often, this option is the only alternative to the widow who wants to keep her house, her home, and stay with her minor children. If you don't want to take the brother of your husband, you have to leave. If you want not to leave, you have to accept as a husband the brother of your married husband. Celebration of marriage in front of Muslim cleric is authorized, and this marriage cannot proved because it is not registered, and they did not give you any documents. Okay. A widow who obtains custody of her children is often accompanied by a family council for the exercise of her parental authority. The same precaution is not taken with regard to the widower who obtained custody of their children. Remark, during code writing, civil society organization made observation directed toward equality of spouse and greater protection of the right of children. These observations were all rejected under pressure from the Islamists. In contrast, all the suggestions from the Islamists were incorporated. Obviously, the objective of the editor of the court was not to respect the international text ratified by Mali in terms of respect for the rights of women and children. In conclusion, the current family code violates the constitution of Mali, which solemnly proclaims equality between men and women, affirms its fidelity to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It also does not respect the CEDAW, the Convention of the Rights of Children, and the Maputo Protocol, which sets the minimum age of marriage at 18 for girls and boys. To obtain a code that respects the principle of equality and protects the rights of children, politicians in Mali must be freed from Islamists. So the answer of my question is the current code of Mali does not take in consideration women's rights and children's rights. I'm sorry for my English.
Thank you very much, Judge Fatoumata. Your English was in fact excellent.
Thank you for your indulgence, yeah.
We'll move on to Eurydice Baptista. Yeah. Eurydice's topic is the protection of children's economic rights after divorce. Over to you, Eurydice.
Good afternoon, everyone. I believe that we're all in the afternoon, wherever we are at the moment. I am a family law in Angola, and upon the invitation to participate, I thought about an issue that it's always in my mind and that brings great worries to myself and other colleagues that practice this law in Angola, which is the protection of economic rights of children after divorce. And I emphasize the economic rights because sometimes parents are present, but if they do not participate in the economic part of the upbringing, those children still suffer. So I wrote a small piece regarding this matter, which is that under the Angolan Family Code, it is established that children deserve special attention within the family, whom, in collaboration with the state, should guarantee their protection and sense of equality so that they are able to achieve the total development, both physically and mentally. In Article 6 of the same code, once again, it is stated that members of the family will contribute to the creation of a new moral code within that family, which will be based on the principles of equal rights, once again, and obligations among parents. In respect for individual personality and in the special protection for children. And it is within the spirit of joint collaboration. By joint collaboration, we mean within family members and the state. One of the sources of family relations is the marriage, naturally. And the Angolan Family Code also establishes that wife and husband are equal in the marriage and have equal rights and obligations, including but not limited to those concerning raising and providing economically for their children. So much so that a divorce will not be complete, the divorce proceeding in Angola will not be complete until a very concise and well-balanced parental agreement is put into place. In fact, in cases in which the divorce is by mutual consent, you still have this limitation. You can only go through a mutual consent divorce, which would be a fast-track divorce, if all matters regarding the children, if there are any, are settled. And in these cases, the state will always be present to defend the welfare of the child or the children, no matter what the parties agree. Unfortunately, these parent agreements that are usually well prepared and obey every legal requirement and imposition very often are not effective. Normally, the parent who has the physical custody of the children, which is traditionally the mother, bears most, if not all, of the economic responsibilities towards that child or children. It is well known universally that women tend to earn less than their male counterparts. Therefore, if a woman has to be solemnly financially responsible for the children, these children will inevitably lack most of the resources they need to flourish within the society. So, in order to help reduce poverty in single parent homes, I believe that we Angolans must reinforce the penalties for non-payment of child support. I believe that the situation is so severe in my country and consequences so drastic for children and the society in general that this behavior should be criminalized. And not much has been done towards that. I think we would have to go to a different matters to discuss. We would even have to get maybe a bit political here if we were to discuss the specific reasons why we're not moving forward in this direction. But what actually happens is you have a case proceeding and that will work just fine. In fact, a family court, in my understanding, is one of those sections within our justice system that actually move forward with some, in a timely manner, if you have the right people motivating the process forward. The problem is once you have a court order stating that a parent, normally the father, should pay child support, we have problems reinforcing it. One of the reasons is that most people work informally. If you don't, if you're not employed by a company that is legal, that has everything into place, and you have a paycheck that comes every month, it becomes very hard for attorneys and the legal system to seek this financial support from a parent. So even if the father says, well, let's say if they work into the oil sector, which is one of the sectors in which people do have a certain organization and we can follow through everything. In these cases, the proceeding would lead to the court asking the company to deduct the amount that has been awarded to the child from that paycheck and deposit on a parent's, the other parent's account. But if that person is not employed, what do we do? So it just falls into an empty space. And you can go back and forth and not get anywhere, and that child is lacking. So what can we possibly do? If you look at that parent living standards, you can see that it's in no way, shape or form lacking. That is a person that has a very good car, that is a person that travels, a person that has the last possessions as far as fashion and everything else goes. But he will tell you that he does not have a job. And I'm sorry for saying he. It's just because in most cases, children stay with their mothers. And it's the father not providing what he should. So in those cases, there is a single mother supporting children on her own. Even when we do know, something could be done from the other side to minimize that situation. And nothing is done. I do think that we need to reinforce our legal system needs to be a bit tougher in the circumstances. And if nothing is done, it is a situation that should be criminalized, considered a crime. And therefore, as a last resource, these people should be put into the criminal system. Because the consequences for a child that is not being supported financially can be very often considered to be a crime. They can attend school, they cannot have medical support, they don't have the basics that we could one day say, well, this is a person that is competing with his counterparts in equal ground, so he will be well adjusted into society. So they start already in a disadvantage. And the reason for that is very often an adult that is not doing their part. And it's a situation that is very, very common, and something needs to be done about it. I do not feel that we're doing much at this point, because we need to change laws for starters. And we need to, obviously there's things that need to be evaluated, because the number of non-compliance is so great that you will probably need more jails, I believe. But something must be done. And hopefully we will move into that direction and provide some resources for these families. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have kept exactly to time. Our next presenter will be Mbaye Fatou Bintou on the topic legislation in Senegal concerning children. You may go ahead. Go ahead, Mbaye.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for allowing me to participate to this webinar. I will start by apologizing for my broken English. English is not my language, and I will try to do my best for this presentation. As we are today in the Day of the African Child, I would like to present you an inventory of accurate rights of children here in my area, Senegal. Senegal ratified a lot of international instruments protecting and promoting children's rights, like the International Convention on the Rights of Children. We have also some specification of in the country, like the African Charter on the Right and Welfare of the Child, which specify that states cannot take pretext to the customs to not give to children the right they this convention gave to them. A state using the tradition or religion as a pretext for not to promote children's right. Okay. This second article of this treaty tells too that the children in this convention, the children is defined like those who are who have less than 18. Okay. We have Senegal ratified too the Hague Convention on Protection of Children and Cooperation in Matters of Inter-Country Adoption. Also, the optional protocol of the CPC on the participation of children in armed conflict. And last but not least, the United Nations Protocol to Prevent, Suppress, and Punish Trafficking in Persons, especially women and children. This one was ratified by Senegal since October 203. I want to focus on domestic legislation among children's rights. Our family court is also based on the French one, We get it after the colonization. But even before the family code, we also have the constitution that says that the youth needs to be protected by state and public collectivities against exploitation, drugs, narcotics, moral abandonment, and delinquencies. They have to, the state and public collectivities, to create freer conditions and public institutions guaranteeing to children education. The Constitution also reinforces the state involvement in children education. We have the Penal Code here in Senegal, who lists a lot of disposition in order to repress severely offenses committed against children. Like sexual abuse, like female genital mutilations, excision, and sexual exploitation, etc. The rape is clearly, largely definited, and the punishment can go from 5 to 10 years of prison. Early marriage is also forbidden, but the age of marriage is 13 instead of 18. We talk here in the legislation, in the situation actual, when they talk about earlier marriage, they consider the age of 13, that is very, very young and don't respect the treaties that were signed, like the African treaty. Okay. Pedophilia too is incriminate. And we have in this kind of infractions, we have, how can I tell it? We have aggravation. It is aggravating if the people who is the author is a parent and someone who have to, the institutor or someone like that. What is the real problem, I think, this moment here is the fact that people, young people, children are involved in matters of in immigration, in clandestine immigration. We have a lot of parents that live yet in Europe and who want their children to come to join them. And as they find some difficulties, they use illegal immigration, and the young people try to join Europe by makeshift canal. We have a law that punishes the fact to help young children going immigrating by this mean. By this mean. During the last month of December, we had a young boy named Abu whose parents paid for the travel, and the makeshift capsized during the travel, and they all die. And when it becomes public that his father was the one who paid for this travel, The father was indicted for manslaughter and complicity in the smuggling of migrants. And he were judged and condemned to stay in jail for 2 years. There are a lot of law or decrees.
Bayo, we seem to have lost your audio. We can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can. Yes, I just were finishing telling you that we have here in Senegal a lot of law or decrees trying to protect children's rights. But the difficulty we have is the effectivity of their application here. The texts are here, but it's difficult to apply them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we understood you, so your English was fine. Yvette, you are next with your topic, the family law and the protection against early marriages in Mozambique. Please unmute.
Thank you, everybody, and greetings from Mozambique. I am very happy to be here, and thank you for your invitation. I am from a Portuguese country, speaking country, so please apologize me for my poor English, but I'm still learning. I will be talking about family law and protection against early marriages in Mozambique. I will be giving you the context, the three family laws that we had in Mozambique, the early marriages, and at the last, the conclusion. About the context, it's important to say that Mozambique is a country in southern Africa with around 30 million of inhabitants, where 66% are young people under 25 years old. 52% of the population of Mozambique are women, and of these women, 48% were victims of early marriages. This data is from the National Institute of Statistics in Mozambique and UNICEF. One note that I would like to give is that Mozambique is a multicultural country with specific and strong customs and traditions. The country is very rich in land, mineral, and marine resources, but the level of poverty is very high, with more than 60% of the population in a situation of poverty. As you can imagine, the corona IDPs we are having, internal displaced people, and the military dynamics tend to aggravate the situation of poverty. So, looking at our legal framework, it's important to say that we have a civil law legal system. We are a democratic country with a constitution, and in our constitution, we have fundamental rights. We are part of a lot of regional and international instruments, including the Maputo Protocol that we all know. We have a formal justice system, and we also have a traditional justice system through the community courts. So far, we have had three family laws, the Civil Code of 1966 that we had from the Portuguese colonialism was the first family law. The second one was the Law 10, 2004 of 25 of August, the family law, and now the new law of family that is the Law 22, 19 of December 11. We call it the new family law. In the first, on the first and the second family laws, the premature, the early marriage was allowed in Mozambique. So children under the age of 18 with parental permission and having socially ponderous reasons, pregnancy and others, had permission to get married under the law. With the new law, the premature marriage or the early marriage has been banned and only 18 years old can be married in a monogamous marriage. With the existence of the formal legal system, as I said at the beginning, there are some harmful traditional practices in our community against women in several provinces that encourages these early marriages. I can give some examples for you. One of them is Kuchwarirwa from the Dao ethnic, and Wakameliwa from the Emakwa ethnic, in which the child is promised to an adult and wealthy man, still the child is in the mother's womb, so that families receive monetary values in return. The other example is the Karipa Ngozi, in which one family offers the other their youngest daughter has payment for a debt or a problem with spirits. The other one is Shimutswa Mafiwa from Shona ethnic, in which a child is given to a gentleman to replace her sister who has run away from the marriage or who has died very early. So in Mozambique, we can find these things, the legal system, but still the cultural and the traditions going on the rural areas. Thus, the Mozambican parliament decided to create a criminal law to penalize the premature marriages and passed the law 1929 of 22 of October. This law criminalizes marriages with minors, persons the man who got married, intermediaries who encourage them, and other persons. The penalties of these crimes go from 2 years to 12 years in prison. An important aspect and a very good thing that we can find in this law is that the crimes are public, and anyone who knows about the situation of an early marriage has the right to report to police station or judicial institutions. It's just to say that not all the crimes are public. They are semi-publics and private crimes where only specific people can have the legitimacy to go and report to the police. In this case, anyone near, far, someone who knows or doesn't know about the family can, doesn't know personally, the family can go and report. One other thing that is a very good about this law is that the child, despite being a minor, at the end of the relationship, we can say that the one who got married with the child goes to the prison. What happens is that the child has patrimonial rights over the assets that were acquired in the course of the union. Because inside the family law, you have to have 18 years old to be capable of having patrimonial rights and et cetera, et cetera. In this case, even if you are a minor, you have the rights, patrimonial rights over the assets inside the union. In conclusion, The family law, the law of prevention of early marriages, offers strong protection as far as premature marriage are concerned. But these are maintained, as we could see, because they are harmful traditional practice against women in some rural areas mainly. But as we can see, it is important to denounce, support the community, and support the police station with all the information, so we can have, so we can better protect our children. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Yvette. That brings us to the end of this session.